lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they were not the droids we're looking for. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. This is episode number 222. 222.
Oh. That's one of those things that's the same four words.
About, palindrome.
What's it called?
It's palindrome.
Palindrome, yes.
It's a numerical palindrome.
Numerical palindrome.
Another one won't happen for another 100 shows.
No, we had one at 212 10 episodes ago.
Okay. Well, let's get on with the show.
Yeah, 32? Anyway, back on content here. This is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about numerical palindromes. Oh, no, yes. About the craft of songwriting after we get past the numerical palindromes. Brand new songwriters or established professionals, we share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become a little bit better at writing songs. Mm-hmm. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and joining me tonight, the bakery members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team.
Oh, some rising is going to happen.
Yeah, we got Batter Bruce.
Yes. You mean like dough?
No, I mean like swing batter.
Oh, swing batter. Okay.
I think it's bakery.
No,
bakery?
We had bakery. Yeah, it's
batter. Oh, it's the batter.
The batter.
The dough.
Yeah, the dough.
Okay.
The dough in the water.
Anyway, I had a good day today, if I could remember it. I was outside. It was warm. There was a guy talking about Jesus at the corner.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was just a regular day at Young and Dundas.
I want his microphone.
It's very powerful.
Very, very powerful. Yeah. And we have Fondant Phil.
Very happy to be back.
That was good, Fondant.
Oh, thank you. It was.
You're well.
Very, very, very sugary.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's been 2 weeks since I've been here, so I've been missing you guys. I hope you've been missing me.
Yeah.
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 We did
sure
notice
we
you were gone.
What?
Sort of.
I appreciate that.
in case you were wondering.
That's what people say about me. They notice my absence.
They notice my absence.
And that's really all I can ask for.
Yeah.
And bravely handling our social media onslaught, we got Volume Vanessa.
Okay. Volume Vanessa.
What's that got to do with baking?
Well, you have to measure stuff in volumes all the time, right?
I think this is a pretty stretched metaphor.
Well, yeah. The V's are always hard.
I know,
hard.
The V is always
change
hard.
Change your name.
I'm sorry.
And keeping an eye and an ear on our Sonic Souffle tonight, it's Lethian Linda.
Lethium? No. What the hell is lithium?
What about...
Not lithium. Lecithin.
Lecithin. Oh,
lecithin,
that
sorry.
Goes what's in bread, right?
Yeah, it's like emulsifier.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Well, I thought you said lithium, and I just kind of...
No, lithium.
What does that have to do with baking?
You've never baked with lithium before, Phil?
All right. That was last week's show.
It's the best thing since sliced bread.
All right. So what's happening?
It's a food that you'd absolutely love.
During the show, send in your comments, questions, baking recipes to @SongTalkRadio on Twitter or Facebook.
And I'll read them live on air.
We will read them live on air. Feedback at songtalk.ca for the old-fashioned email.
And if you have a better metaphor for Neil for the next time you host, send those in as well.
Hey.
That's,
at least I try.
No, we appreciate it.
That's true. Like, we actually never worked that hard.
No.
Hardest working man in radio, Mr. Neil Modi.
Right here. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. #sarcasm. And please stop by our website at songtalk.ca to see the lyrics for tonight's show and find out how you can be a guest on the show. And speaking of guests, this is going to be a bit of a hybrid episode.
Yep.
Right?
A little talk, a little listen.
A little talk, a little listen, a little guest showing up.
It's a new thing we're trying.
So I went to Peter Hook 2 weeks ago. Peter Hook was bass player of Joy Division.
Oh, okay.
And New Order. And so is that the Danforth Music Hall, which is a smallish medium hall in Toronto in the West
With seating. With
seating.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's not one of those
East
big
end,
block
Danforth.
And I learned something very interesting. Mm. When you go to a show with people who are over 40, they have two main goals in life. One is to get in to see the show,
mm-hmm.
and the second is to get the hell out.
Right.
Because the last song they do is Love Will Tear Us Apart, which is the Joy Division's big hit.
Big hit, yes.
Within 10 seconds of them starting that song, people grabbed their coats and started leaving.
Really?
Oh.
Was this the encore? This was the encore,
no.
Right?
No. This was it.
Babysitters.
Well, yeah, and it's but what was weird is that's not like it's a huge... It's not like the ACC, which takes forever. I mean, it's a pretty small
seats there. Venue. Do you have to stand up?
Yeah, it's seats. Really,
they
nice.
Put new seats in.
Yeah, it's sort of like Mass Hall.
See, I didn't. We went to see what was that dude's name from South Africa?
Jeremy Loops.
It was his name. Yeah, Loops. We went to see that at a club downtown. Vanessa and I a couple weeks ago. What was that called? That club?
Adelaide Hall.
Adelaide Hall.
Adelaide.
But I got there and I realized no seats. So I'm standing for a 2.5 hour concert. And with earplugs. But, you know, it just taught me that I need to get there earlier if I'm going to sit down. There were a few seats.
Yeah, and they were scooped up right away.
Yeah. They usually go first.
But it was interesting. We're out on the scene, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. The thing with standing is people tend to drink more.
Yeah.
When standing? Well, I can attest to the people leaving because I used to work at a concert venue. And, yeah, you'd hear the encore start or even before the encore. And we had a curfew of 11. So, for the most part, shows ended at 11. They rarely ended earlier than that. Mm. And it'd be like 10:40 and you'd see people leaving. And you'd be like, it's not done yet. And be like, oh, I got to get to the train or I want to beat the parking traffic. Yeah. You'd think, well, why'd you spend all this money? Because, you know, they're going to play their
big
hits.
What was that venue called?
A venue in Toronto.
Oh, I see. It's going to be has to be rain nameless.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
people,
I just
yeah.
did
you did you burn bridges?
No, no, oh. I didn't burn bridges, okay. But I decided it was time to move on.
It's a strange thing. People seem to be very
obsessed with getting out of the parking lot.
Here's a bit of background the way I grew up. My father hated lines so much. Mm. We would actually go to movies halfway through and then stay to the same point.
Afterwards. No, you saw the ending,
like
then
for the next
beginning?
Screening?
Yeah.
So you'd watch the end and then watch the beginning.
Okay, that's awful.
That's weird.
That's like those people that...
God bless them.
Well, they get a novel and they just read the last chapter first.
Yeah.
So they know how it ends and then they go back to the beginning.
Yeah, it's strange.
It's a strange
Have you guys
thing.
Ever written a song from the ending for... to the front?
No.
Don't
Do
think
that?
So.
No.
I've written songs that have started with the middle... Or like started with the bridge or started with the chorus.
When I tell people to, I teach people to tell success stories for their business. That's part of my living. And I always tell them to start with the ending because if it's not powerful, there's no reason to put together the front part.
That's true.
You need a powerful ending. Walt Disney apparently used to tell his writers when the story editors came in to pitch a new idea for a film or a cartoon. What's the ending? Okay. All right. Tell me the story. Because, you know, if you don't have an... It's like Saturday Night Live never had endings. But songs need endings.
Well, songs need endings, but the question is, do you start with the ending or do you...
I think I start with the chorus more. No, I start with a verse. I usually am very linear. I'll just have an idea and I'll start writing with to the verse.
And often, if you're starting with the chorus in a lot of ways is the end of the song. It's the summation. It's the...
Well, yeah.
The kind of concluding thought. Yeah.
In Nashville, Nashville songwriters say... Whenever they do these co-writes, they get together, they start with the chorus because their theory is if they don't have a hook, they don't have a song.
Yeah.
Or they're so hook-oriented. So the idea is build the chorus first. You can always fill in the pre-story, right? The verse.
Yeah, they're not interested in just writing a song because it's fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're doing it to sell stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you're starting with that, does that imply that your verse will not be hooky?
No, you want multiple hooks, but the thing is they basically were saying, I don't know whether it was our guest from LA that was saying that or whether somebody from Nashville actually I read was saying that. It's just a shortcut. Like you're working on a lot of ideas and if you keep working on verses but you don't really have a chorus for it. Mm-hmm. Although I was listening to some co-writers talk about working with Adele. Because she did a lot of co-writes, right, for her albums. And they said she's really good. She, like, they'll just play something on the piano, a couple chords or a guitar lick or something, and she'll just wander around humming to herself, and then she'll come back with the lyrics and throw it together. She's very
talented. My understanding and my experience has been if I start with the chorus, then at least I've got the central idea sort of nailed down, and then the verses can kind of attach to it. And it gives me a much more focused kind of
So when
of
you say the idea, do you mean like a lyrical idea?
Yeah, like a lyrical idea. Yeah, whether there's a melody attached to it or not at that point, sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. But I found historically that's if I start with the chorus main idea, then I can get the song done faster, number one, and I can and it just seems that much more focused.
Yeah, I guess it's for me because lyrics are always the last thing I write.
Yeah.
So I might have a couple of words or a couple of lines that fit naturally, but I'm always kind of fitting in the
You know what I want to do for my next song, and I'm probably going to do this co-write with Linda.
Mm-hmm.
I want to write a song which is repeats the hook 15 times. Like, you know these pop songs that somehow it's like, wow, that's the whole song as they repeat that like 15 times, but it's really good. You know, it's really good what they created. And then you just put in a little bit extra. Because I've never had the nerve to repeat something that many times.
Do you guys think the hook is actually a teachable thing? Because I've always thought we should do a theme show on the hook.
I think it is. I mean, there is, I think you have to be sort of conscious of it.
They did a study.
Yeah.
And they do a scientific study about what melody there's of intervals and
there's thirds and fifths. You got to stick to thirds and fifths mostly. Yeah.
I think what I would suggest, because I think there's songs that you hear and you go, okay, that's the hook.
Yeah.
And especially for beginning songwriters, what you want to do is you really want to take your favorite song and really pull it apart. And then if you're playing with a guitar and starts on the G, figure out what the melody is on the guitar, even if you don't have to necessarily know the notes, but just picking it out. But then actually you can figure out where the hook is.
Right.
And it kind of puts it into a bit more of a conscious part of your brain. Because otherwise you just kind of go, oh, it's kind of cool, but you don't really know what the hook is. And it does kind of kill the song for you a bit, because you do sort of see how it's all sort of put together.
Yeah.
But you learn so much.
There's a fellow I've started following on YouTube, Rick Beato, and a very seasoned musician. I never heard of this guy before, but he's got this series of YouTube videos called Why Is This Song Great? And he downloads like the multi-tracks and plays like the various parts and talks a little bit about production and arrangement, but then he'll also play the parts individually on his guitar or on his piano and really talk about like those exact sort of things. Like what interval did they use here? What chord?
Yeah. Well, let's do a show on hooks.
Yeah.
I think it'd be interesting.
Yeah, we'll definitely
add it to the list.
Yeah. So we're going to do, in future, we're going to do a lot more theme shows. They seem to be very popular with our listening audience and certainly with Michael out in the control room.
So if you have ideas, you can email them into us, ideas for theme episodes. Either you're interested in something that you'd like to explore further, or you don't understand something, like, hey, can you do an episode on whatever?
Yes.
Or, you know, just drop us
anything
email.
To do with songwriting. I mean, it could be, gee, I'd like to have one where you talk about the difference between writing on piano versus writing on guitar.
Yeah.
Because I do both and they're different, you know?
And
we will dive in that way.
You know, I do want to get more stuff into things about exploring subjects like copyright and publishing, because that's something that, especially with publishing, I've never been too on top of it. I've always kind of let other people sort of deal with that, and you know.
We should get someone from SOCAN.
We should. Yeah. I think
I just saw a guy on LinkedIn. I'm going to connect
SOCAN
with him.
SOCAN, if you're listening.
He's the A&R guy there.
He should come onto our show, I think. You know?
I'll invite him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's so many performance rights organizations, actually, that you should... even if you're just playing in the local scene, that you should register with it, because you actually can make a lot more money. And I think I think especially with musicians, we're so used to not making money, we just kind of never we just assume that you're not going to make any money.
We as musicians,
especially
don't, but
in
some
Toronto,
do.
Like in Toronto, it's rough.
And I think we're also going to be doing a theme show sometime on fundraising. Like, especially in Canada, we're talking about Factor and all those
Factor
sorts
grants,
of things.
Yeah.
You know, and we can get
there
some...
There is a lot of funding, actually.
There's a consultant in Toronto that helps you get funding from the government.
Oh,
and
really?
You remember that young lady that was in here, one of our guests, and she used one of those?
Jules?
It was Jules or somebody. Mm-hmm. And we said, how did you get your money? Oh, I hired someone to do that for us.
Oh, right.
Remember?
Right.
That's right. And when Jules just released her first single and her first... she's doing some gangbuster stuff.
Oh, let's have a listen.
Yeah, no, we'll have to definitely... I want to get her back in because she's going to be something.
You know, we had a song submitted recently. Why don't we have a listen to that, though? Do you think that would be cool?
Yeah, yeah,
sure.
Who is it by? Can you tell us a bit about the artist?
So the artist we have lined up here is Dahlia Fernandez, and she's a winner of the Best Singer-Songwriter by the Toronto Independent Music Awards and has been nominated for EP of the Year at the IMAs in New York. And Dahlia just released her indie pop EP called Shift, released under the name simply Dahlia, sort of like Cher or Madonna.
Okay.
Dahlia is a self-taught pianist whose music is instantly accessible, yet utterly unclassifiable. Dahlia was born in Mumbai, India, and moved with her family from Dubai to Toronto in the late 1990s. Since then, she's collaborated with stars including hip-hop head Rich Kid, who's worked with Drake, Busta Rhymes, and Chaos, R&B writer and producer Roy Hamilton III, Bird, who's worked with Michael Jackson, Britney Spears, and NSYNC.
Who are they?
And America's Got Talent finalist Stacey Kay. And while Dahlia is a riveting performer in her own right, her status as an in-demand songwriter for hire has resulted in a music supervision and licensing deal with Eggplant Collective. Dahlia recently returned from a tour in India on her Shift tour, and she's currently working on her next record. And we've got a couple of songs.
What are you going to hear first?
We can hear a song called Broken.
Okay.
Was Broken by Dahlia Fernandez.
Ooh, yay!
Very nice, beautiful song. And surprise, 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 we have Dahlia here in the studio with us. How are you, Dahlia?
Ooh, I'm good. How are you, Neil?
Pretty good.
Beautiful song.
Thank you.
It's a gorgeous song.
We were guessing the time signature. Is that 6/8?
It's 6/8, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about where that song came from?
Broken. Okay, so well, I was actually going through a divorce at the time, and the person, I know, I look young, and the person who I actually started to be friends with and be close to. I started falling for them, a little savior complex that happens. And mm-hmm. then you realize that person doesn't love you quite in that way. They love me very strongly as a friend. And so I started to cherish that. But at the time of writing the song, I was miserable. Mm-hmm. And the little piano riff you hear is just something I just kept playing over and over. And I didn't actually think it was going to make the record. And then my producer and my best friend was like, who is also my best friend, I should say, nickname, also known as Nick Londonio. He was like, oh, you know, I know you're choosing your songs for your record, but what happened to that piano riff one? I'm like, it was originally called Unbroken at the time. So I was like, oh, Unbroken? And he said, yeah, sure, I think that's the one. Play it. And he's like, lady, that's the one. That's gotta be on.
Wait, so this one you had no lyric?
I had lyrics for it.
Okay.
It was being called Unbroken for the longest time because I wanted to feel fierce and and okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But someone who heard the song, we recorded the entire vocals with Unbroken.
Oh.
And then I sent it out to a few people and they were like, are you trying to be ironic? I was like, why? It's like, why? It's like, you sound pretty broken on the song. Just own it. Just, it's okay not to be okay kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when you actually listen to what the song wants
Start with broken, right? But yeah. I'm broken in the first chorus, and then it's an I'm unbroken. So you take the listener somewhere.
But is that just a typo on the lyric sheet?
It might be a typo.
Okay,
sorry,
because I was listening for it.
The original sheet.
I was listening in the recording, and she didn't sing unbroken. She just sings broken.
Oh, because I thought that was actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
and I sort of thought, well,
so
that's
here
really
it's unbroken.
It should be unbroken. That's probably the original sheet that I tried to change, and I missed one.
Oh, wow. Well, this is great. This is the original stuff.
Yeah.
So the question is, where do you think the hook is?
Ooh.
Something beautiful. That's on top of the chorus.
To
totally.
Me, I think it's oh so invincible now. I think that's
so well, it's the same. It's the same melodic line.
It is. Yeah, I would
right?
say it's
is
that
so
intersection
it,
there.
That, that is that hook, and it repeats, which makes it even hookier.
No, also invincible now is a different melody than from something beautiful. Something beautiful.
I start from that. I always think it's from. I walk away from something beautiful. I always think it's from that right over there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's also about what I tend to do in most of my songs. I don't know if I'll ever get away from this. I don't know. In my verses, I usually talk about what's the strain in the situation, and then I'll pre-chorus is like sort of solutioning it, and chorus is, you know, sort of, this is what's wrong. And I use my bridge to sort of resolution whatever the conflict is I'm going going on with the time. So you'll see that as a trend in my tunes. Mm-hmm. But it's always usually hopeful. A lot of my of my tunes, the bridge, it'll be like, you know, although things are going bad or seem like it's challenging, there's hope. There's hope.
So you're reflecting your sort of look, your way you look at life is hopeful.
Totally.
So even if you start with something that's a negative feeling, you'll always try and at least later on in the song or a certain point in the song, flip it and make it a little bit more.
Absolutely.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was interesting how you go into the chorus, because very often with the chorus, you'll do a jump, like do a five or, you know, go five
I think
or something.
That's
but
it's almost kind of my go-to, smooth. It seems, yeah.
Yeah, but this doesn't seem to jump that way. It actually kind of goes very smoothly.
It goes smooth, but then it rises right away.
Yeah, yeah, which I thought was really effective.
Yeah, yeah, which absolutely works. Right?
I have a question about the very opening. So I noticed that the phrasing was very broken, so to speak, on this.
Wow.
I let you in, not knowing how I could.
Yes.
So what was the intention there?
Okay, the real secret is that that's a habit. So actually my vocal coach and mentor in many ways, Mika Barnes, who's a former Nylon, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
So Mika was actually telling me, you know, it was cool when I started to develop it as my style a few years ago, 3.5 years ago. I started to change the way I sort of approach my songs, and I started to do this often. There's another song I have called Wash Away, and I do the exact same thing in the opening, you know.
Hesitant and broken.
Yeah.
Phrasing.
But it was almost like stylistic.
That thing.
Exactly.
Right.
And then it's like, I let you in could be a phrase by itself, but I let you in not knowing how is also a sentence. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't trying to be clever, but it seems to be the thing I do. And then, you know, he did caution me to say, you know, although you're doing it stylistically, make sure you're not crutching on that. as well. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes, you know, but where is that line where you, you're stylistic?
Because I love that. I thought that worked really well. Because one great thing is that it allows you to go somewhere.
Right.
Because there's lots of space. And so many people, when they throw me songs, I just hear like they're at 10 on the first verse. And or even if you're at 9, you don't have very far to go. You don't have,
right.
You know. So this was nice and I just thought that was so effective. But yeah, when do you do it too much?
It's tough. I think it has to reflect. It needs to reflect the mood. And I think the mood is kind of reflective and hesitant. And gathering your thoughts.
Yeah.
And then when you motor through to the chorus, you're starting to go, I walked away from something beautiful, but you just don't think that we are incredible.
Right.
You're so invincible, and I'm unbroken.
Yeah.
So you're getting more confidence. So it works stylistically.
I think so.
I think the thing for me on that, I did notice that right away, and only because the last time I came to the songwriters meetup and presented a song, Bruce, you pointed out how my melody was very broken that way throughout the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And I think to a certain extent, if you write your melody first without any words, then that could end up happening.
Yeah.
I do like the contrast between having lots of space in the verse and not having lots of space in the chorus.
Right,
I think that that's a good way to establish contrast.
Yeah.
The best way to do it is to have a lots of space in the verse, but your phrases still are complete within between the breaks.
Well, it's funny because when you get you have to sing these songs for so long, you know, doing the demo version and before you finally deliver the final take. And by the time you have to live with it and actually comes out, it's been so many years that you can't wait to take it to the stage and do something different with it.
Mm.
And that's challenging. So it's interesting that we're talking about this particular part. So I tend to do, I just came off tour and I keep doing it the same way. So I'd open with the piano and I'd go, I let you in, not knowing how I could do without your love. So I'm using the how again to emphasize.
It
feels like more like a natural
a
thing. Like, hey, you know, I let you in not knowing how I could do without your love. Like the way I would say
you're
it.
You're thinking on your feet kind of.
Yeah.
It's it's conversational.
And sometimes it is just a little detail like that, a little tweak like that can make a big difference. Actually.
And from a musical standpoint, you'd call that staccato versus legato, kind of, right? A staccato style, then into legato, a sort of smoother, languorous.
Towards the end of the phrase, I do that,
Okay.
But, it's interesting how you can play with that on stage, but some people are waiting, especially when you're still emerging, like myself, that you do it the way they've heard the record, because, you know, you haven't done it enough for them to, so they're waiting to do it the first time around the way they hear it. It's not your fifth tour sort of thing. So, but you've been so used to doing it in the studio, you're just waiting to do something different. I'm like, I can't.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's really a cool thing, actually. Okay, and we'll be back right after this.
And for those of you just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, streamed on songtalk.ca. And tonight, our guest is Dahlia. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca and we'll share your thoughts here on the show and you'll be famous just like us. And you can find all the links to the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio on the resources page at the website. Coming up on the next couple of weeks. Next week, we'll have our Key Modulations special extravaganza with our big music brain guest, Frank Horvat. That's going to be really
interesting.
That's going to be
Professor Frank.
Take some notes.
Yes, it's going to be deep diving on key modulation so we know what they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
And,
and argue about what they actually
month,
are.
And the week after that, as if that wasn't enough, and that should be, next, the week after that is going to be Toronto-based hip-hop artist Ill Vibe. And this is going to be our first hip hop. And as a, big Public Enemy guy, I'm looking forward to this. And if you're
coming
Toronto
as well?
Area,
who?
Public Enemy.
No. He's just saying he's a fan of Public Enemy.
Oh, okay. I thought they were maybe going to be here. Sorry.
Continue on.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sleepy.
And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next songwriters meetup on Sunday, May 27th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Lots of fun. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link to the meetup group.
I'll be there.
Yes. So back to it. So we're going to read.
Yeah, so we have this wonderful little book called The Musician's Dictionary, and authored by Phil. Who are the authors of this book before we get to that?
David W. Barber and Dave Donald, and we'll put a link on our resources page for
this. Yeah, yeah.
They're from Canada.
And, they're Canadian.
Flute, a sophisticated pea shooter with a range of up to 500 yards and deadly accuracy in close quarters. Blown transversally to confuse the enemy, it can be dismantled into three small pieces for easy concealment.
Yeah.
That's my ex-wife was a flute player. We used to talk
Use it like that as a pea shooter?
We used to talk a lot about embouchure.
Yes.
Did you know that flute players, they can't kiss you the night of the concert because the embouchure gets thrown off?
Oh, wow.
Because you have to do this.
They can't kiss you?
You have to have your... that's what she said. Do you think that's why we divorced? said that on nights she didn't have a concert, too.
It was just like, not tonight, Bruce. I have a concert.
Oh, right. Well, that happened every night. Maybe I shouldn't have eaten so much garlic.
Yes, that always is basically what our show is like.
It's good for warding off the vampires.
Okay. So talk about doing a variation of your song, which you recorded, and then changing it live, because there's a fine line. Because I know when people do it too much, it really ticks
me
off.
Well, you don't mess with the hook, right?
Yeah.
As long as you don't mess with the hook, you're probably fine.
You've messed with the hook,
Dahlia.
I've
messed with the hook.
You messed with the hook in this?
Of a dream lover.
Oh, really?
I did. I did mess with the hook of Dream Lover, which I think we're also going to be, diving into today.
We'll
so we'll get into
that. I want to point out something else about this song that I really like. The chorus, the rhyme structure in the verse. We just did a theme show a few weeks back on rhyme structure, so I'm noticing rhyme structure everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So you got beautiful, invincible, beautiful, incredible, invincible.
Yes.
A-A-A. And then you go, but I'm broken. Right. And what that does from a craft point of view is it really brings attention and focus to the now I'm broken.
Unbroken.
Right? Unbroken?
Broken. It's broken.
It's broken.
Yeah.
Now I'm broken, right? Because you're breaking the rhyme structure. It's also a shorter line than the other lines.
Exactly.
So it really kind of in Pat Pattison's online course on Coursera, you call that a spotlight. You're putting a spotlight on that.
I didn't. I don't really think of the mechanisms during the songwriting process. You know, and I was actually quite intimidated to come on this show because, like, I'm a self-taught musician. I was writing by ear for the longest time, and in some ways still do. And then I started taking my brother-in-law actually went to Berkeley and took sax as his first instrument. And he said, you know what, why don't we start to learn how you phrase your, I love your songs. Why don't we like analyze it? Because, and Broken's one of his favorite songs actually. Mm. And so he started to teach me and he started to break down my songs and he gave me homework and started to learn a little bit more music theory.
Yeah. And I think that's a fine line. I mean, we talk about this on the show all the time. How much of this is intuition and how much of it is being clever and all that sort of stuff, right? And I think, a lot of the time it just sort of pours out of you and that's perfectly fine and you don't know why it's working the way it works, but it just works.
I think actually being self-taught is a great way to start because one thing, it trains your ear.
And
it makes you very kind of fast on your feet.
Yeah, and also like, I for the longest time I cursed my parents, probably some of my resistance to sort of blaming something rather than owning it. And I kept saying, you sent my sister for music school and she took up to, grade 6 in piano. And my brother is, took drums and guitar and can play a bit of the keys. They haven't written many songs in their life. Probably, actually, none. My sister's probably, I think she wrote one, right? So, and it, for them, it's like, I got to go to class. Like, they wanted to do it more of a hobby, my brother especially. And so, and
what's
for me...
What's your resentment based on?
My resentment was that I didn't get sent to music school.
Oh,
but I'm wondering, had I would have been a little too analytical and people saying, you can't do that. And I don't think I would have written most of the songs that I did.
If you start off being self-taught, you can learn stuff on top of it. Mm-hmm. And that just helps you to get where you want to get faster.
Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't change your inspiration. It just makes it easier.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And oftentimes if you're going based on intuition and you hit some kind of a roadblock or something's not quite working the way you want it to work, then you can introduce a songwriting hack that you've learned about.
Right. Yeah.
And say, if I tweak this, then it might work better. And, sometimes you just stumble upon it, which is fine too, but sometimes it's good to have a little bit of a toolbox. I'm kind of the opposite way. I knew my theory before I could even play an instrument.
Oh, like, okay. I knew so you're the, like, the flip I, of me.
I'm the flip. I learned music theory in public school. I knew you know, every good boy deserves fudge and all the rest of it, right?
Yeah.
And then I started playing instruments.
Because this is in 6'8", and 6'8" is something I've always sort of thought I should try to experiment with, and I never have. I mean, I've gotten to 3'4", but I haven't actually got to 6'8" yet. Was this just something you started playing and it turned out to be 6'8"?
It's so funny that you say this. So I started playing it, and I look really weird when I play the piano because I play most of my chords inverse, like the inverse of most of the stuff you hear. And I didn't actually play anything on this record. I don't think I played anything because the producer, who's my closest friend, he is a very accomplished pianist. He's been playing since he was 6 years old, and so I'm not even going to touch him. So he was doing it, and he's like, I was like, I love you so much, but I need you to play the entire thing over again because I just don't think the feel is there. And it was so hard to teach him to do it because I'm doing it in this very convoluted, self-taught pianist way. And then Michael Shand, who I'm sure you know is an accomplished jazz musician as well, he was playing it for my rehearsal, for my release party, rather. And he's like, I think you need to play the song, and I will play the guitar. I'll just do the little fills and things like that because I don't know how you're doing this with your hand, but it's harder than you think. And so it's encouraging to get like things like that from people who sort of like have mastered this since they were 5.
So you didn't intentionally think, oh, I think I'll write a song in 6'8".
No, it just happened. Landed, I was going over, I had to submit it for a bunch of radio stuff. I can't remember. Someone needed a whole bunch of all my signatures. And I was like, you know, doing all the math. I'm like, wait, I actually wrote a song in 6'8". And I'm like, confirming with my producer, I'm like, did I actually write a song in 6'8"? He's yes,
that's
lady. Really
cool. I actually did that once. I was doing a cover song that was originally in 4/4. I just started reinterpreted and started playing it on it was a guitar song. I started playing it on the piano. And when I started recording it on my computer, I'm like, wait a minute, this thing's in 3/4.
Right.
Okay.
6'8" is more of a piano kind of time signature.
6'8"?
Yeah.
It's not exclusive to any instrument.
No, not exclusive.
I don't think so.
No, but, or even,
I mean, yeah, I would say. Depends whether you went for it or not.
You can play 6'8" on a guitar.
We've got another song to hear, I think.
Yeah, should we do the other song? This one is super catchy.
Dream Lover.
Yeah. And
Now, what was the process of writing this one like?
I was actually still in my corporate job when I wrote this, and I was walking home along the Queensway in Etobicoke, and I got this little melody in my head. I didn't really have lyrics necessarily. I started whistling, and I do that a lot. I actually whistle on stage and things like that. So I started to do that, and I got home. As soon as I got to my piano, and I started to figure out what it is that I was whistling, figure out the chords, and put words to the whistle. The funny thing about the whistle is actually Steve D'Angelo, who's been around for like last 3 decades. He'll hate me saying this on radio, but looks young as ever. He wrote on the record as well, and he helped me with the horn arrangement. So he had 3 of these big guys, you know, been around forever, Dave Dunlop and the gang is there, ready to play these 3-part horns. And I go, I had this idea in my head, and I was like, oh, people gonna think it's so silly. I'm like, before you guys go, can you do this? And I'm like, which is the end part of the horn that you hear in the sort of its own hook.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so I started doing the entire thing, and I won't do the entire thing here, but I do it, and they're like, yeah, we're going back in. We're gonna do that. We're just going to do that. And that ended up being sort of, you know, he did all this arrangement on the song, and he's like, this is the best part. Mm. You know, we're keeping that.
Oh, cool. Right on.
So there we are. Dream Lover.
Okay, right. Let's take a listen.
Where will we go? What will we do? How will we know if our love is true? Where would this lead? What will we need? And I wanna know how loving you so. What will we do? Would this be enough? Where would we go if we fell in love? Could this be just like heaven? And every day with your sweet smile, everything's magical. since you've come along. Oh, there is a reason you make me feel this way, lover. This way, lover. This way, oh, lover. It's such a dream, it's such a dream, it's such a dream, lover. It's such a dream, lover. It's such a dream.
Fernandez. And you got the whistle at the end there.
I love
did
that
get
whistle.
To my whistle.
Is that your whistle?
That is my whistle.
That is fine whistling.
Thank you.
That's like
Grandpa on the Porch whistling.
No, when you know the backstory, you know where the horn part came from.
Yeah.
Like, well, why not?
Whistling is tough, and that's really pro-level whistling.
I should take part. There's a competition that happens in the U.S. that they have the $35,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whistling contest?
I keep telling myself I'm going to do it. So, you know, that was Dave Dunlop on trumpet. The tenor and alto was played by John Johnson, and the baritone was Perry White.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Power horns.
Smooth as silk.
Interesting, because it definitely had a bit of the Motown sound. And I'm a huge Motown guy. I've been going through this phase where I've been researching how they recorded stuff and trying to emulate in my home studio.
Right.
It's interesting, though, you didn't go all the way, that there's like the drums are a little bit sort of dry and stiff a bit.
Yeah.
Because I think that kind of makes it a bit more modern, because it's easy to do the stuff and kind of, you know, try to replicate like the old
stuff. And you know, the entire record for that matter, you know, is if you just heard me on the piano, it sounds very old school. Mm. And what I love and a lot of people have said this in terms of the production is made it so relevant. And now that's actually a hip hop beat in the beginning, right? But then you never think that it would just go into these 70s pop drums kind of thing.
The interesting thing, the groove of this song is still it's kind of like the 6/8 thing. It's swung. It's a little bit of a shuffle, right? So it's got that three. There's a three element in the rhythm. I really love the hooks. There's one thing that I don't know if you guys will believe me that it bothers me about this song.
Oh, wow.
Is that, I mean, it's not even that it bothers me, but it's incredibly...
Makes you curious?
It makes me curious. It makes me curious. It is incredibly open-ended in terms of there's nothing specific about the relationship.
Ooh.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, it's so universally applicable that it's, you know,
I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's... You know, a lot of the great songs, I think, are like that. I mean, there's something about being specific. There's different kinds of songwriting. And I think this is kind of a classic pop song. And I think pop songs can be a bit more open.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everybody could relate to it. You mean,
like, I don't tell... You don't know whether it's about...
Well, it's about somebody, right? What would you do if you were writing a song like this? You mean you have something a little more detail about?
Well, yeah,
a story,
I mean, okay, I'm thinking. I can't remember what the name of this band is. It's a brother and sister team. I think they're from New York or something. And it's kind of the same thing. They got this very Motown. Everything they do sounds like Stevie Wonder, right?
Yeah.
And they have this cute little love song called something like. Like, the basic idea of it is, let's get together and do nothing. Like, let's just hang out and lounge in our pajama pants. And they say, let's watch HBO. Let's order pad thai.
I talk about a kiss? Come on now. Bridge.
I'm just saying.
From my head,
like,
to my toes. That's not something I want to do with my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I'm not sure that it really bothers me. Because the first time I heard this song, I was like, this was a song that you put on CBC Searchlight, I believe, right?
Yes, this was the one.
Yeah, and this is the song that prompted me to contact you and invite you on the show because I liked it, right? I really dug it, right? And now that I'm looking at the lyrics, I'm like, well, it's pretty open.
It is pretty open, actually, maybe for a while, because where would we go, what would we do? That happens for a while. Even in verse two, when will we wake up to blue skies? And then I threw in a couple of babies and things like that.
Is this a pre-chorus here, basically? Or like it takes a long time to get to chorus, right?
Yeah. So what I would say actually is that where would we go the first time around is actually sort of like an intro more than it is a verse. Mm-hmm. I think verse one would be like, where would we go? Would this be enough there? Mm. Where would we go if we fell in love? That's really verse one. Okay. The beginning is really like this, like
setup.
A setup.
Yeah, it's really cool because not many people do that anymore, which is really nice, actually. It's
it was a little gutsy.
Because the old, of course, the old Tin Pan Alley guys, they would do that. You know, we were talking
and
about
that.
And
it's actually quite, actually, I'm surprised. This was the one that got the most radio play. This was the one that got picked
absolutely.
Up.
Yeah, absolutely. Not surprisingly.
And it picks up so late, the chorus, that you think no one would take it for radio.
Because what was that thing you were saying, Phil, about Spotify and all the streaming services? You got to get to the chorus.
People want to have the hook within the first 15 seconds or 20 seconds?
Yeah, 20 to 30 max.
20 to 30 maximum.
I think it's interesting enough that hip-hop beat gets thrown in, so I think it created some interest.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, such a dream lover. I thought, I really liked that because it was... The hardest thing with writing these kinds of songs is finding a new way of saying what has been said 5 kajillion times over. But I thought Dream Lover was actually kind of a fresh way of doing that.
Really?
I
intentionally put it as Dream, L-O-V-A, so that it would be easy to find.
But I kind of say it like that, too. 60s.
There is, and that's one that I like a lot, too. Yeah, Bobby Darin or
Bobby
something, right?
Dream Lover, da-da-da, where are you,
And that's a big influence on my sound. Like, I grew up with Patsy Cline and, you know, a lot of, like Cliff Richard, Everly Brothers, and there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Of that. So I really wanted to bring that, but without sounding like a complete knockoff. So when I heard what my producer did with it, I was like, yes, okay, now it's a completely fresh take on this concept. And actually, fun facts, I actually pride myself on writing songs quickly. And then someone told me, it's okay to take longer with your stuff. It's okay to revisit it. It doesn't make you not a genius or, you know what I mean? Like, don't be so hard on yourself. And this took me a long time because I liked someone in a very superficial infatuation sort of way. And this all just came to me.
Yeah.
Except I stopped very quickly. I fell out of it, this infatuation. And I never had a verse two. Because I only write like authentically, you know? So
you had to find another infatuation.
I found someone else. Wrote verse two. And now when I sing it on stage, I have to sing it about my present partner. And so, it took two loves to write this song.
You don't want to be too specific because, you know, like it might, you know, in 3 months it might be different.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It might drive you apart.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean, what do you tell your current partner that all my love songs are about you?
Yeah. Yeah. Even the ones I wrote
before I met you.
He's a songwriter himself, so he can't fool me. I'm waiting for my song. That's
Did this song go through a lot of changes in the production and the pre-production and the production?
This one sounds a lot like the right from the start. We had this idea, and it sounds so much like it, and it's so difficult because, you know, you get demo love, you know, for a lot of this stuff, and even Broken I had massive demo love for, and so it was like very stripped and just the piano. But this, when I first got it, it was always sort of this cool like beat coming in. It was always sort of like when it first starts, there's that record sound, which I fell in love with, that stays over my voice.
Yeah.
It wasn't a distortion, it's actually just this layered stem, right? So I was like, don't change this. I have the original, and it should always sound like this.
Yeah.
And it's so different from the rest of the record.
I think because you had that whistling part to start with, right?
Yeah,
and you feel like if that's going to be a horn part,
you're
going to have a horn section, then you need drums, you need the bass, you need the guitars, you need a full band arrangement.
Well, I didn't have that hook whistle. I was just whistling like the melody.
What instrument did you write it on?
On the keys.
You don't play guitar then, or you
play
a little bit?
I play a million songs on the guitar because I know six chords, all right?
Yeah.
That's all you need.
But I
don't write much on the guitar. I've written like two or three songs.
I'm curious. I always ask people this, if they play guitar and piano, does a different kind of song come out depending on what instrument you choose?
That's
what I thought.
Totally, because the guitar...
The feel is different.
And when I was learning the guitar, I was like, why didn't I learn the guitar sooner? Like, it's so much
easier.
It's so much easier. Mm-hmm.
Once you know the six chords, you're good.
Yeah, and then you can, learn some, variations on it, and you can do cool things. And it's crazy where your vocal space will go as well.
Yeah.
Because you're not competing with what you're mostly playing on the piano is probably the mids, right?
Yeah, because with the piano, you tend to be around middle C. Mm-hmm. So you have to be really conscious where your voice is going to be.
Exactly. And that's the other challenge. You write over there, and then it doesn't mean you should perform it over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually working now with getting help on rearranging everything so I can do a little bit more fills and, make it so that it
plays. Stage?
Yeah, I play piano on stage. I was self-conscious for the longest time, and it seems to be the recurring theme that when people come off, I was only doing the one song or the two songs and letting the band help me out with the rest. And then you get the commentaries like, oh, yeah, by the way, I will never forget that piano tune you played. And it's okay, I'm starting to see this.
Mm. Yes.
And all the I told you so is when you go and tell the people, you know what this person says? I've told you this for 10 years.
You know, it's interesting. I was just listening to a podcast, and they were saying every time you get a compliment, write it down, because that'll actually tell you the stuff that you should be leaning into, because this is what people are saying that you're good.
How are you?
Which I never thought of. I don't know why
I have
never thought of it
before. I have a different question. How were you received in India?
Oh, very well. So actually, I was very nervous because what I ended up doing is actually playing to a lot of these jazz venues through the country. And some of them had been around for forever. Some of them are pretty new. But these really accomplished jazz musicians that live in India, from all over the world. My drummer for some of the tour was from Hungary, and he's moved there. He's a drum teacher there, one of the top music schools.
How do you tour such a big country?
Oh, it was insane. And to finish my thought, the percussionist has moved from France. No worries. Yeah. He moved from France. Emmanuel Simon, and so he was really well known, so I got a lot of gigs through him because people kept saying, oh, you're doing it with Emmanuel, come on down.
How were the audiences compared to in Canada?
Okay, well, the thing is, it's hard to compare because I went to specific venues that look to absorb new artists and new material, which is a totally different audience. If you go to you all know this, if you go to a venue that they look for covers, that's what I'm saying. And it's such a big country that it's actually, you go to one small area and it's masses of people that come to each venue, right? Because just how populated the area is. And it was just it was really touching that people, there was one person that came to two cities, like actually, you know, that was like far away from each other. And yeah, it was really, really cool. And I wish those venues were here too, instead of like, are you going to sing a cover song now? It's like, because that's a different audience. You don't want to play to that audience, you know, that's talking to each other. Oh, and there is absolute silence at these venues. That was what was incredible.
Nice.
Like, yeah, and they're like, if you'd like to have a conversation, you know, please take it outside. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Dolly. Right. Like,
that's absolutely amazing you did that. And that's afraid. That's all the time we have. We have to wrap it up.
You got to come back.
Thanks so much for having me.
You got to come back.
Yes. Come back. It's like you just got here.
Yeah, I'm going to grab my keyboards next time.
Okay, so thank you.
Very, and leave 5 hours early.
Yes. Okay. Take a subway. thanks very much to our guest, Dalia Fernandez.
Thank
great
you.
Stuff.
Thank you.
Please send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, email feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio. Stop by the website, songtalk.ca.
And how do we get more of your music, Dalia?
You can go online, Dalia Music Now, on any of the social media or on Spotify. Look for Dalia and Dream Lover, spelled with an A at the end instead of an ER.
How do you spell Dalia?
D-A-H-L-I-A.
And please subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher.com. Don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on the show on our resources page at songtalk.ca. If you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup. It's on Sunday, May the 27th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link over to Meetup. Thank you to Dalia Fernandez for joining us tonight. Thank you to Vanessa Vreeland for putting
thank
us out there
Vanessa.
On the social media. Thank you to Linda Lavender for making us
thank
sound
you,
so good.
Thank
and
you.
Most of all, we'd like to thank our listeners wherever you may be. You can follow me, neilmodi.com. You can follow Bruce.
BruceHarrett.com.
You can follow Phil.
At TheFilEmery.
TheFilEmery on Twitter. Vanessa Vreeland.
Sunny underscore
Vanessa on Twitter, and Linda Lavender
at lindalavender.com.
And please stop by the website, songtalk.ca, browse past shows. We've got 222 of them now, and find out how you can be a guest on our show. Have a good night and keep on writing.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Woo! Bye.